intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Today, a place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant? Dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Hey, welcome everyone to Dare to Think Out Loud. But as we know, Americans don't think, they feel. Well, what are we going to do about that? We've got too many years of indoctrination to maybe bring boobas to the point that they can actually engage their brain instead of their emotions. But anyway, welcome everyone, and here we are on Friday, the 18th day of March in the year of 2022, in the gradual decline of America. So I am very fortunate again today to be joined by my good friend from out there in Western Arizona, the good Cal Robbins. Cal, how are you today, my buddy?
I'm doing good today, Mark. Thanks for asking. How you doing?
Well, if I was any better, I'd be illegal in at least 57 states, according to Obama.
Well, you probably are illegal just like the rest of us anyways. Because you think out loud.
Yeah,
that's a crime, isn't it? Thought crime.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, you can think all you want to. Well, wait a minute. No, you can't. You can think up to the point that some people consider it hate. And then you have to stop thinking.
You can think what other people think you should think. But don't think on your own.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And don't hold an individual thought. No, you got to have a group think going. That's all you can do.
Yeah. It's got to be right up there with Karl Marx. You've got to follow the dictates of Karl Marx. And you can't say anything bad about anybody, especially if it happens to be the truth.
Well, yeah.
So here we are today, guys, and we're also very fortunate to have another very good friend from out there in California. Good old Scorpio. Dave, how are you today?
I'm doing very good, Mike. And of course, you can't criticize those who are in power. That's really the bottom line. That's where you know you've crossed the line into hate, Mike.
Well, gosh, you know, I was just talking with Cal before we started the program, and I truly don't hate anybody. There's a lot of people I don't like, but I don't hate anybody. And I really get upset when people claim that I hate someone, especially when I'm speaking the truth. The truth is not hate. The truth is only hate to a Marxist. So anyway, today's program, what we're going to talk about is we're going to be talking about how the American public is incapable of thinking out loud and how they really do not have a source for their own thoughts until they turn on the lobotomy box. So, Cal, what would be your thoughts on that?
Well, I would agree with it just in general purposes. I'm kind of ignorant to it because I don't turn on the lobotomy box. So I'm not up to date on the daily narrative that we're all supposed to hold in their own head. I wake up and I think on my own. I don't turn on the lobotomy box to start my day, to get my day going. I just never turn it on all day long or all night long.
Well, so here's the thing. And I believe, it's my statement, that the news networks or the lobotomy box or, you know, the media, whatever form it takes, have become the brain of America. Because most Americans today, and I see it on a daily basis, if you bring up something about history, the only reference they have is to what was said on TV or what they can Google or what was said on Facebook. They have no personal knowledge. Dave, have you found that to be contrary?
No, I think that's true, Mike.
So if Americans really have no basis of knowledge. And, you know, the schools have turned into, you know, emotional havens for the ill-informed. And that includes especially the colleges of America who are most, and they're very proud of the fact that they're Marxist. Although they don't call it Marxist so much, they call it socialism, but most of them are socialism. Are socialistic, and they're proud of it, and they brag about it. I mean, it's that critical. So, Cal, if we bring up a point in history, and it happened to me yesterday on Jim Ram's program, when I was talking about the Standing Army, and I got challenged. Well, there's no standing army in the Constitution. Yes, there is. Sorry, but there is. It's kind of stunning at times that people. It's bad enough that people are actually ignorant of true history, but it's really amazing when they wish to challenge you on acquired knowledge with what they've been taught by the lobotomy box and by people who sell CDs called wall builders and certain constitutional attorneys. Suddenly, because they heard it from them, it's the truth. They've done no research on their own. They haven't looked at the source documents. They haven't looked at the letters between the people we call founders. They've done none of this, but their knowledge is superior to yours because they heard it on TV or they read it from someone who is a constitutional attorney or someone who makes CDs to sell to America's churches. So what are your thoughts on that, Cal? Because I know that you and I have been, how long have we been communicating now?
A good couple of years now.
And one of the things I have tried to do from the very beginning is to always base what I teach on original source documentation. I don't want anyone to take my opinion. My opinion doesn't matter. Let's look at the source documentation. And that is why in my live lessons that I have taught in several states, one of the first things I say to the people is don't believe a damn thing I say. Look it up on your own. Check it out. Look at my sources. I didn't say this. Someone else did. So, Cal, if you would, please, just in the years that we've been communicating, give me an idea about what you've learned.
Before, I started listening to you and conversing with you, you know, I was already had an anti-federalist mindset. You know, I was already on a position of the Constitution, you know, that it was a false document. But you helped me to understand the Bill of Rights and how that is a tub to a whale, how it's just a bill of goods. It just brought clarity to my whole understanding of history. And that understanding of history helps you to understand why and where the people are at today. I mean, people look around and things are going crazy, but the anti-federalists predicted all this stuff would happen. This stuff that's going on was predicted. And it was predicted because, you know, they ratified the Constitution and there are no securities to secure there's nothing in there to secure the people's liberty in the Constitution. I mean, it's designed not to do that. It was designed to protect the wealth and power of the aristocracy at that time and the future generations of the aristocracy. And it's done so. If you look around the aristocracy, they're doing great. I mean, the common man, they're losing all their rights. They're losing all their freedom. I don't see how people, you know, want to know why things are so crazy, but and Mike will do it and I'll do it. We'll point out this is why things are this way because they did this back then, but they cannot see the cause and effect that created the mess that people are in today. And only knowing history is the way you can figure your way out of this mess.
Oh, well, very well said, Cal. And to just to prove that I'm not involved in hate here this morning, I'm going to quote Malcolm X on a quote that was provided by a beautiful lady out there in Arkansas. She shall remain nameless, except her name's Misty. And she provided this quote, and it is, again, this is to prove I'm not involved in hate. I'm quoting Malcolm X. And the quote is, "The media's the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent." And that's power because they control the minds of the masses, unquote. Thoughts on that, Dave?
Well, I think that shows that anyone can be demonized by the powers that be. And it's like, you know, it kind of goes back to Henry Kissinger's observation that truth doesn't matter, perception does. And that's very dangerous thinking, but it is true from the standpoint of someone in power. If you can manipulate the public into the proper stance, the truth doesn't matter. What matters is that you've got the right people demonized to keep yourself in power and to manipulate the public in the correct fashion to keep yourself in power. And that's what we see that going on every day, Mike.
Oh, absolutely, Dave. And, would you discount Malcolm X's very poignant quote? Would you discount that because you hate him?
Absolutely not. It's a very accurate and it's a very concise observation about reality. It shows that man was actually quite a thinker.
Well, obviously, we three aren't engaged in hate speech here because we quoted a black man, right?
Well, that's one way of looking at it, Mike.
Oh, well, guys, I tell you what, sometimes I look at this, and as Cal said, one of the things that I noticed years ago in starting in the 80s in researching source documents was even back then, let's drop back 40 years. And even back then, when I would look at what the Anti-Federalists wrote, and then I begin to ask myself, why in my education was I not taught about the Anti-Federalists? Why was the only publication involving the Anti-Federalists for 100 years was the statement by Cecilia Kenyon that they were men of little faith? But yet, when I looked around, pardon me, when I looked around in the 1980s and then forward, the thing that I saw, and I began to be bewildered as to how these people at this period of time, 235 years ago, how they could so well predict where this government was going to lead us. And you look around you today and you ask yourself, okay, who was right, the Federalist or the Anti-Federalist? And there's no way the Federalists were right. Everything they predicted is a lie. But they are the heralded people by Americans still today. Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, John Jay. Of course, most Americans don't have a clue who John Jay was anyway. But they certainly know who Hamilton and Madison were. And their predictions in the Federalist Papers and what they said this government would do has been a lie. But then we look at Samuel Bryan, Richard Henry Lee, Patrick Henry. We look at those people, and everything they predicted has come true. So, Cal, how do we discount, how does the American people discount the Anti-Federalists and claim they didn't know what they were talking about?
Because that's part of the indoctrination from the government schools. Either they're not taught about it or, and I had this conversation with a prominent professor slash author out of a Connecticut university about this, and his basic point was, well, the Anti-Federalists lost, so what they had to say is irrelevant. I was told that by a history professor out of a, you know, I'm not to name names, but, you know, that's what Professor Gutman said.
Well, I know exactly who you're talking about, and I know that his associates, because I made a similar claim to one of his associates, a matter of fact, one of his co-authors, who also shall remain nameless, and I asked him some 3 years ago about the fact that the Constitution was unconstitutional, how that the Constitution was a violation of the Articles of Confederation on several points. And his response to me was, well, the people ratified it, so it doesn't make any difference. What? If I can rob a bank and get four people out of seven to say that they think it's okay that I robbed the bank, does that make it legal? And besides, the people had no real involvement in the ratification conventions. Cal, and we're into that ratification convention study now in the Teach Me platform. And tell me, so far we've covered three states in their ratification. We've covered Delaware, and we have New Jersey, and we have covered now completed Pennsylvania this morning. What have you learned from that, sir?
The Federalists had this kind of all sewed up in the bag before it happened. I mean, there was no real debate on the Constitution, especially, I mean, Delaware. They pretty much passed it just to be first. And New Jersey, they went right along. And now we've moved on to Pennsylvania, which is one of the last states that ratified. And we haven't gotten into the Pennsylvania Minority Report yet, have you, Mike, on that Teach Me?
Well, actually, I
kind of alluded to it, but not, yeah, listed it, but not the actual report, which is an interesting report, you know. And I think a lot of this goes back to, you know, the mythology surrounding the Constitution or what constitutional theory is. You know, a Constitution should do this, you know, it should limit government, it should, you know, have a division of powers, it should do this. Well, this Constitution that the Federalists crafted does none of that. It has the appearance of doing it, but it basically created a monarchy, the powers of a monarchy and an oligarchy, and it has done so at the price of the people's liberty. The people, even though they don't have any freedom, even though they've lost their liberty, even though they don't have freedom, they still cling to this document that is the source of what taking away their freedoms and liberty. And I just don't understand it. There's just parchment worship out there, but that's the indoctrination of the government school system. That's the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto.
Well, very well said. And one of the guys I mentioned in Pennsylvania who has been one of my heroes, along with Robert Whitehill, was John Smiley. Mm-hmm. Now, how many times were you taught about John Smiley during your educational process, Dave?
Oh, never heard him mentioned. And, you know, I thought that Cal just brought up a great point, which is that the Federalists had the game kind of sewn up before it started, and that implies a conspiracy that this was pre-planned and it was a done deal before anyone actually got there to start debating it. That's a very interesting point.
Oh, so you would be in concurrence then with our good friend, the Sentinel, Samuel Bryant. You would be in concurrence with this anti-federalist then when he said that the Constitutional Convention and their creation was a criminal conspiracy. Would that be an accurate statement?
Well, that's a very apt choice of words. And it really kind of set the stage for, you know, the behavior of the American government since the very beginning. It's really quite incredible.
Well, I thought it was kind of amazing, too, that when we look at this and we look at what the anti-federalists had to say, and then along came about 1830, and we go from 1830 to 1950. In essence, almost 120 years. And we find that no one in history mentions the anti-federalist in writing or anything else. Why would you try to shut these people up for 100 years, Cal?
Well, if you know, shut up that, you know, that dissenting opinion, you know, to give some people a different point of view, then you're way more free and easily able to indoctrinate people into accepting the tyranny. I mean, a lot of people operate under tyranny. They don't even realize that they're being enslaved. They don't even feel these chains of servitude wrapped around their chains, wrapped around their ankles and wrists. They not only don't feel these chains, they support these chains. They vote for these chains. They'll argue with you if you tell them you have chains of servitude wrapped around you. They will argue with you, and they'll tell you, well, if you don't like these chains, you should go move to another country.
Yeah, we had that offer yesterday, right?
Yes. The guy wants to pay for me to go to Belize. Hey, dude, you got it, man. Pay for my trip.
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing how these people have been, and I think look at the mastery of this psychological operation. You get the people to embrace the people who actually steal their freedoms. They actually think, they call them heroes. And they call them these wonderful people, and these are the people who are taking their freedoms on a daily basis. Now, here, is there ever any consideration among law enforcement or the military about what is or what is not constitutional? Cal?
No, they just follow orders. That's their job.
They follow lawful orders. Now, then there's going to be the people who say, well, it's not lawful if it wasn't authorized by the Constitution. Do you think a cop or a member of the military really gives a damn? They follow orders. And the orders that they follow most vehemently and with the most passion are the unconstitutional orders that they are given. And that has always struck me as, you know, and to jump back to our old friend John Smiley from Pennsylvania. And he said in the Virginia ratification, I mean, Virginia, in the Pennsylvania ratification convention, he said, in a free government, there never will be the need of a standing army, for it depends on the confidence of the people. If it does not so depend, it is not free. The Constitutional Convention knew this was not a free government. Otherwise, they would not have asked the powers of the purse and the sword, meaning, of course, the power of taxation and the power of coercion and force.
Well, Mike, you know, this is fascinating what you're hitting upon. And, you know, the very fact that the Anti-Federalists had to write under assumed names, you know, it implies that they were actually afraid for their own personal safety to speak out what they actually thought even back then. And it shows you how dangerous certain information is to those who are in power.
Well, in some ways, Dave, but one of the things to take it back, and not to dispute exactly what you said, but we know that the Federalists started out writing under the assumed name of Publius. And it was common back then among the Anti-Federalists, and they even mentioned this, that they did not want to mention their names publicly, not so much for fear, but for the fact that they did not, they wanted to publish the facts, and they wanted to, people to look at those facts dispassionately, regardless of who said them.
Well, that's an excellent clarification. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, I don't think anyone in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania doubted who the Sentinel was. I mean, he, Samuel Bryan made it pretty evident who he was. But, yes, I believe there was some fear of retaliation on some, so it's not totally incorrect, Dave. But it was the fact that these people, you know, were openly saying what they actually felt. And again, they countered because the Federalists wrote under Publius, you know, and there were three people writing under Publius. And we know that possibly under Sentinel that it was both Samuel Bryan and perhaps his father, George, who also did this. But, guys, just stop and think. Cal, if we gave today, if we were able to go to any major university in the country and give them a test on the Anti-Federalist, what would they say? Would they be able to answer the questions if we gave them a test on Anti-Federalist, Cal?
Most likely not. It's not taught. It's not taught for a reason. Is there a college course on the Anti-Federalists in the history college of any university? I mean, can you sign up for Anti-Federalist 101? Why isn't there? I mean, it is part of history. It's a major part of the founding era of this country, and it's not taught. Why? It's like virgin soils to a historian. This would be like, you know, I can't understand why they don't clamor all over it. I mean, as a history buff myself, I love reading the Anti-Federalists and the observations they have. It's like finding a holy grail all the time, at least to me, you know, as someone who now enjoys history.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Dave, you're a well-educated American. How many hours, do you remember being instructed on what the Anti-Federalists had to say about government?
Pretty much about zero, Mike. Yeah, it's really incredible. About zero.
Hmm. Well, again, we have to ask the question, why? And possibly, you know, it's a real big issue for me. I mean, part of an issue. It's a really hard decision for me to decide who my favorite Anti-Federalist was. And, you know, we have Patrick Henry who said he would rather, he preferred death to any entity without liberty. Give me liberty or give me death. If he wasn't free, he didn't want to live. That's a pretty strong statement. And most Americans are taught about that. We're taught about that in school. Give me liberty or give me death. But why do they not mention the 17 days of the Virginia Ratification Convention where he spoke against the Constitution? Cal, you brought out some very salient points about that in a recent discussion on Messenger about what Patrick Henry had to say. Can you find that fairly quickly, sir? I would love for you to read it.
Let me see if I can find it. Give me a minute. Go ahead, Mike. It's going to take me a minute to find it.
Okay. All right.
Bounce between phone and computer and, okay, we're right. Where was it, you know? Where do you put that?
Yeah, and you're about as technically adept as I am.
And plus, it's remembering what format I put that on.
Yeah, that's true. But it was the, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the June the 5th speech which Patrick Henry gave to the Virginia Ratification Convention, which was just, I mean, it was riveting what he had to say about the government that was created by the Constitution, the government that all people embrace today as their savior. Dave, what are your thoughts on Patrick Henry?
Well, Mike, I find it really interesting that certain parts of his, you know, philosophy and point of view are stressed to the point where almost every American has heard of it. But then other more important parts that really sort of define his character have been completely, you know, expunged from the record, let's say. And this is obviously deliberate. This is something that was done deliberately by, you know, so-called historians to shape the narrative in the way that they wanted it done. So it's really, Mike, you know, it shows that the deliberate shaping of history and leaving out facts on purpose. That's really incredible.
Well, you know, why would you keep the truth from anyone, Dave?
Because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, certain information is very dangerous to those in power. And the fact that the writings of the Anti-Federalists have been expunged from the record for most people shows, I think, because, you know, once you start to look at it, we see that there is a serious split at the very beginning of the country as to which way it should go. And they don't want people to know that.
So, do you think that the wonderful comment by Samuel Bryan as Sentinel, the comment that they would get the Constitution accepted by wrapping it in the cloaks of divinity? Do you think he had a point there, buddy?
Well, yeah, and I think that's a great technique that's been used countless times by governments, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You convince the people that their tyranny was inspired by God. You know, what a masterstroke that is.
Well, it goes back to the divine right of kings, right?
Right, exactly. And you had any luck yet, Cal?
No, sir, I'm still looking.
All right.
I believe it was in your chat forum, your Rebel Madman chat forum program. is where I put that, but I'm looking and cannot find it. Are we talking about what Patrick Henry said?
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
About why he opposed the Constitution because there are no real punishments?
Right. Yeah, that was it. But in the meantime, while you're still looking, I will read what Samuel Bryan had to say about the birth of the Constitution. And Samuel Bryan said, and I quote, "The evil genius of darkness presided at its birth. It came forth under the veil of mystery, its true features being carefully concealed. And every deceptive art has been and is practicing to have this spurious brat received as the genuine offspring of heaven-born liberty. So fearful are its patrons that you should discern the imposition, that they have hurried on its adoption with the greatest precipitation. After so recent a triumph over British despots, after such torrents of blood and treasure have been spent, after involving ourselves in the distresses of an arduous war and incurring such a debt for the express purpose of asserting the rights of humanity, it is truly astonishing that a set of men among ourselves should have the effrontery to attempt the destruction of our liberties. But in this enlightened age, to hope to dupe the people by the arts they are practicing is still more extraordinary." Unquote. Wow. Samuel Bryan didn't mince words, did he, guys?
Not at all.
Yeah, that's pretty direct, let's say.
Well, he pretty well nailed it. And our old friend we mentioned before, John Smiley, which everyone has heard of, well, I'm sure, you know, all kindergartners and first and second and third graders have all heard about John Smiley, as well as all of the graduates of your Ivy League colleges. But Smiley was accused by the Federalists of inciting people to armed rebellion against the Constitution in Fayette County and in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in 1788. So here they decided they would blame him for a fight against, and also the Federalists quoted in the newspaper said a total and blatant lie, said that Patrick Henry supported the Constitution. Really? Kind of amazing, isn't it?
Well, Chris Ann Hall always quotes Patrick Henry, and she actually uses a picture of Mercy Otis Warren for one of her chat classes, who was also against the Constitution. So there's a lot of disingenuous stuff going on out there.
Oh, well, so you use, in your teachings, you use a person who opposed the Constitution to present to the people the fact that they supported it? Now, what would you call someone who would do that?
A con? A scam artist?
Oh, okay.
A politician? Wait, those are all the same thing, right?
Or somebody making money?
Yeah.
Yeah, that you mentioned someone there that most people, I'm sure, have heard of right along with old John Smiley, and that would be Mercy Otis Warren. Wow, we had a lady anti-federalist. Did we have any lady federalist?
None that participated in the debates that I'm aware of. The closest you would have would probably be Abigail Adams.
Hmm. Well.
But I don't know where she came down on that other than just supporting her husband.
Well, that was true. You know, and she allegedly, and I certainly can't prove this, but it was mentioned by several that it was, in fact, Ms. Adams who was the originator of the thought behind the Alien and Sedition Acts to protect her husband.
I thought of that when you started the show. You mentioned how people, you know, you deplatform or censor them, you know, as a Marxist thing, you know, to speak out against the government. And I instantly thought of, well, John Adams, the Alien Sedition Act, and Abraham Lincoln and all the papers and newspaper editors and everything he jailed for speaking out against his actions. And, I mean, people look at an action like that and go, well, that's communist, that's Marxist. Yet they fail to look at John Adams and Abraham Lincoln, just those two alone, who have done it, and then fail to look at what's going on now, how people are being deplatformed. Yes, not by the government itself, but these social platforms like Facebook and this, they're tied into the government. So.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think about, Cal, and you know, if we want to get into this hate thing where you ought to hate people, I thought it ironic that back in 1788, 1787, when Mercy Otis Warren came out with her objections to the Constitution, written, you know, by her, pardon me, but she used the name of the Colombian Patriot. In other words, Transit Gloria Americana. And that's what she wrote under. But isn't it amazing that back then that the people on both sides thought this was Elbridge Gerry? They didn't believe that a woman had the audacity or the mental capacity to object to the Constitution? And so It's absolutely amazing what she wrote. And of course, it was credited to a man. And she said, mankind may amuse themselves with theoretic systems of liberty and trace its social and moral effects on sciences, virtue, industry, and every improvement of which the human mind is capable. But we can only discern its true value by the practical and wretched effects of slavery. And thus dreadfully will they be realized when the inhabitants of the eastern states are dragging out a miserable existence. Only on the gleanings of their fields and the southern blessed with a softer and more fertile climate are languishing in hopeless poverty. And when asked what has become of the flower of their crop and the rich produce of their farms, they may answer in the hapless style of the man of La Mancha. The steward of my lord has seized it and sent it to Madrid. Or in the same literal language of truth, the exigencies of government require that the collectors of revenue should transmit it to the federal city. Guys, here is something that if you look at source document history, you learn that the people at the Constitutional Convention and during that era of time who most opposed the institution of slavery, which was included in the Constitution, were anti-federalist. Luther Martin spoke out against it. George Mason spoke out against it. Mercy Otis Warren spoke out against it. Lots of people spoke against the inclusion of slavery in the original Constitution of 1787. In today's enlightened world about slavery, why are those people not given all kind of accolades and the people, Madison, Hamilton, Washington, and others who supported slavery, why are they not criticized? Answer that question for me, please, Cal and Dave.
It's like everything else. Everything's 180 degrees out of phase. George Mason, you know, was from Virginia, a slave state, and a slave owner, and he was speaking out against slavery. Luther Martin from Maryland, that was a slave state at the time. These people were calling for the end of slavery, yet the Constitution, one, made slavery constitutional, and two, made the recovery of an escaped slave or a slave that's been to a free country recoverable to the master that owned them. I mean, it changed that precedent. There was a history that if a slave made it to any free country, state, because they were countries back then, their own countries, if they stepped into free land, they were instantly considered free. And once free, always free. That was the mantra. And the Constitution changed that. I mean, they actually put an article in the Constitution, the slave clause, to where those slaves were now to be returned to their slave owners. So
absolutely. And
it promoted slavery. But the narrative out there, I've heard the narrative that the Constitution helped do away with slavery. It promoted it.
Exactly. And the fact that slavery was set to expire, they only authorized it in the Constitution for 20 years.
Well, that was the slave trade, Mike.
Yeah,
trade and slavery were two different things because they said they could, you know, stop the slave trade and the importation of slaves, which would have got rid of that $10 head per slave for the federal government.
Right.
But they also could control the migration. In other words, the expansion of slavery, which is what led to Bloody Kansas, which led to the Missouri Compromise. All of that led to all of those conflicts. That part of the Constitution.
Well, absolutely. And here, let me jump back for just a second to the most eloquent words of Mercy Otis Warren. And she said, and I quote, "Animated with the firmest zeal for the interest of this country, the peace and union of the United States, and the freedom and happiness of a people who have made the most costly sacrifices in the cause of liberty, who have braved the power of Britain, weathered the convulsions of war, and waded through the blood of friends and foes to establish their independence and to support the freedom of the human mind, I cannot silently witness this degradation," talking about the Constitution, "without calling on them, before they are compelled to blush at their own servitude and to turn back their languid eyes on their lost liberties, to consider that the character of nations generally changes at the moment of revolution. And when patriotism is discountenanced and public virtue becomes the ridicule of the sycophant, when every man of liberality, firmness, and penetration who cannot lick the hand stretched out to oppress is deemed an enemy to the state, then is the gulf of despotism set open, and the grades to slavery, though rapid, are scarcely perceptible. Then genius drags heavily its iron chain, science is neglected, and real merit flies to the shades for security from reproach. The mind becomes enervated, and the national character sinks to a kind of apathy with only energy sufficient to curse the breast that gives it milk. And as an elegant writer observes, to bewail every new birth as an increase of misery under a government where the mind is necessarily debased and talents are seduced to become the progenitors of usurpation and tyranny." Unquote. Dave, your thoughts, my friend? You've been too quiet here.
Wow. That's so spot on. You know, again, those in power mold the perceptions of history and the people under them. That's, I think, the bottom line there.
Well, who could have imagined back in 1788 and 89 when these Federalists were trying to promote their scheme of tyranny? Who would imagine that at one point in time in our history, they would have a 24-hour platform on which to spew their lies and hatred?
Oh yeah, a 24-hour platform and a virtual monopoly, or actually a monopoly over the airwaves, essentially. I mean, these six corporations that control the media, it's really one corporation with, when you look at the interlocking ownership and the fact that the agenda advanced is almost identical on every channel. You've got a monopoly of information. So yeah, it's, I think a tyrant's dream. They couldn't have ever dreamed of such incredible power and ability to manipulate at that time.
Well, let's go back to two CIA directors by the name of William. And the first one is Casey. And he said in 1982, and I quote, "We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false," unquote. And then a few years later, CIA Director William Colby, who had problems paddling a canoe, ended up being drowned mysteriously. He said in testimony before the U.S. Congress, "We own every major voice in the U.S. media. Every voice of importance in the U.S. media." Now, why did they tell us that, Cal?
They love to state the truth and rub it in people's face what they're doing. I don't know. They seem to enjoy it. "We're going to do this to you." And the people go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, whatever." And then they do it. And the people go, "What happened?" I don't know. No, the powers of be, I've noticed that. They almost seem to telegraph everything they're going to do right before they do it. And the people just don't even see it coming, even though they were told it was going to happen.
Well, and
go ahead, Dave.
No, I'm just saying what's interesting is I don't think we'd get that kind of honesty today. I don't think they'd be so frank. Such things aren't even ever mentioned now, which is interesting.
I take Klaus Schwab at his word. The people will have nothing and will like it. I hope you and I can have this discussion in 2030 and go, "Golly, that guy was right. He told us this was going to be like this." I mean, I'm sure Klaus Schwab's speaking about the majority of people, because there will always be the outliers and the rebels out there. There will always be those who don't conform to the yoke. Hopefully there will always be. But the majority of the people just seem to be accepting these chains of servitude. They have their bread and circuses. What else do they need?
Well, they plan on grinding people down to a level of suffering that I think most of us are going to find incomprehensible, and people are going to welcome the rescue that they offer us. I think that's the game
exactly.
Here. And yeah. And, Mike, you know, I think of your quote from, Casey every time I see a young person in their 20s wearing a mask.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The verification's there, and we're nearing the end of the first hour. So I want to throw one more quote by Mercy Otis Warren out for you people and for everyone who happens to be listening, something that this brilliant lady had to say, a female anti-federalist. Wow, guys, we're looking at diversity here. The Federalists didn't have their own female spokesperson. The anti-federalists did. And she said, and I quote, that even sedition is not the most indubitable enemy to the public welfare, but that its most dreadful foe is despotism, which always changes the character of nations for the worse and is productive of nothing but vice. And the tyrant no longer excites to the pursuits of glory or virtue. It is not talents. It is baseness and servility that he cherishes. And the weight of arbitrary power destroys the spring of emulation. Damn. Unquote. What? Oh. Did this woman get it or what? Cal?
Well, you know, you could say that she was predicting the future. Actually, she was just reciting the history, the past. She was just saying, this is what happens. This is, look at his. So, you know, this would just be another, you know, this is why people need to know all of true history. All of it. What the anti-federalists said, the whole story. What the federalists said to each other behind closed doors, which you can find in their letters. And you have to take all of that into account before you formulate what you think your reality is. Because she was just quoting, she wasn't predicting the future, she was quoting the past.
Well, I think it was Patrick Henry who said, I know of no way of predicting the future but by the past. So I think they were in absolute certainty, were they not?
Well, exactly. Well, it's the same reason why, you know, in your Rebel Madman writings, you have accurately predicted the future. Look, we can go back 17 years, and you were, what was it, 17 years ago? You yourself were predicting something like this immunization thing that came around.
Oh, you mean back when I predicted a pandemic and a mandated vaccine?
Yes.
I didn't mean to. That was an accident.
Well, maybe you gave them the idea. We can blame this all on you, huh?
Yeah, blame it on me. Yeah. Well, again, I know of no way of predicting in future but by the past. And, guys, we're coming up on the break for the first hour. Man, it flies by. You know, when you're having fun with friends, this is just something else. And especially when we get to highlight in some manner this wonderful woman who was so prescient, so brilliant, that she doesn't get any mention in today's feminist society. Why would the feminist avoid a correlation with Mercy Otis Warren, except for those who try to pretend she stood for exactly the opposite of what she stood for? Well, anyway, it's about time, and we will be back in the second hour. Should hear the music here fairly soon. And, folks, let me apologize for all of the extraneous noise here, but I am sitting through a very violent thunderstorm at the moment. Lots of thunder, lots of lightning, and lots of rain. So there's the music. Be back with you in a few for Dare to Think Out Loud.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
In the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyper. Welcome to the crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud. And this is kind of a program that I wanted to do to prove to people that we don't believe that the truth is hate speech. We believe that the truth, regardless of its source, is to be honored for being, in fact, the truth. That's why we've mentioned Malcolm X and Mercy Otis Warren today. Two people who spoke the truth. And we have it. And have talked about it. And again, just thinking ahead, and I have a propensity to forget things as we near the end of the program. So today, I would like to tell everyone at this point that if you miss today's program, miss portions of it, or would like to have a replay to send out to your friends and neighbors or what have you, it will be available shortly after the program on my Telegram channel, Rebel Madman. So please, folks, take the opportunity to pass it along so that others may be given the opportunity to hear what original documents and stuff that we promote on this program. So, Cal, any thoughts yourself, sir?
No, I would encourage anybody to make avail themselves of the opportunity to read the history you provide for people on your Telegram programs. The true history. The full history. Read it for yourself and then decide for yourself. Don't let the pundits and the media tell you what to think. Read it for yourself. Decide for yourself. Who was right? Who was wrong? The Federalists or the Anti-Federalists?
Oh, well said, Cal. And that is, in fact, my goal. I don't want to influence anyone's opinion. That's not what I'm about. I want people to look at the both sides of an issue, just like any jury would be required to do, or you would hope they would do, just to look at both sides of the evidence and then make up your own mind. That makes you an individual and not part of the collective. You do not become a part of the collective thought, because that is the very definition of socialism.
Yes, you will be assimilated, as they say. Mike, you know, I had a question just briefly. Is there any way to sort of judge or correlate the popularity of the Constitution when it was first being proposed and when it first was enacted by the American public? Is there any way to gauge what the American public, you know, thoughts on it were at the time?
Well, not a lot, Dave, because we have to remember that because of the suffrage restrictions, when the people of the 13 United States, of course there were only 11 because North Carolina and Rhode Island had not ratified, but at the election for the first members of the United States Congress in the first presidential election, just a slight tick above 6% of the American public was allowed to vote. And in my lessons that I've been providing on Teach Me platform, I have been going through the documentation of how the Federalists, who were in control of the media back then, just like they are today, how they kept the anti-Federalist essays from being publicized. And there is documentation that many of the people were actually paid not to produce anti-Federalists. And then we had, you know, the head of the U.S. Postal Service, who changed the form of delivery from stagecoach to individual rider during that time period. And it's documented. Even Washington, George Washington, became upset at what was being done with the media, that the media was suppressing the truth from the people, and that anti-Federalist essays were being destroyed or never even printed. So I hope in some way there I might have touched on an answer to your program, Dave. I mean, to your question, Dave. Any follow-up you'd like?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not surprising that – I mean, it would be hard to know the answer to that question, but you just have to wonder how popular this idea of a federal government was in the beginning. I don't think that many, you know, just from where I sit, I can't imagine that many Americans at that time thinking, yeah, that's what we need, is a federal government on top of the state government. That's what we need. I'm having trouble seeing the popularity in that sort of thinking, except for the people that were going to sit on top of the power there.
Well, that's a very astute observation, Dave, and we have to stop and think about the period of time, 1787, 1788, 1789, the major newspapers, which was the only media of the day, were centered in the areas under Federalist control, the larger cities. So they controlled the dissemination of information, just like we have now with the American media under Operation Mockingbird and several others, is that the flow of information is restricted. So the people form their opinions on lies and half-truths. And we have a nation of 330 million people today doing that on a broad scale.
Yeah, and I guess it's hard to imagine, you know, a farmer, most Americans were farmers of one kind or another. Back then, it's hard to imagine a farmer tending his crops thinking to himself, boy, you know what I need is a federal government. That'd really make my life better.
Well, one of the things in my lessons, Dave, that I've been pointing out is that the various states were told at that time that they owed money to the federal government for the Revolutionary War. So those state governments on many times imposed taxation not on the people themselves or their income, but on their property that they owned. And that was the very reason for several rebellions. Shays' Rebellion and others was the fact that suddenly the people were being taxed at a heavy rate to pay the debt, which in effect was a debt to the wealthy aristocracy who were the stockholders in the Bank of North America. And many of the people out there farming, Dave, you know, from can to can't, as my grandfather used to say, we get up, we start to work when we can, and we go to work when we can't, which means sunrise to sunset.
Right.
And so that was the way that they did. So they didn't have a lot of time to go over to their neighbor and say, well, what do you think about this new federal government? Most of them, I believe, Dave, from all of the studies I've been able to do over the past 40 years, I believe that well over half of the American public in 1787, 1788 didn't even know about the Constitution.
Wow.
Yep. I would agree with that.
That is very believable, Mike? And very profound as well.
Yes, sir, Cal.
Well, as an example to this, you know, the lessons you put out, today's lesson on Teach Me pretty much addresses exactly what Scorpio was asking, you know, about the opposition. I mean, you shared, you know, the lesson today, you know, shared more stuff that I had no idea about. And it talked about, you know, protests that the anti-federals actually did. They got thrown in jail, and then later they got released. And it's just an example of the lessons that people can learn if they would avail themselves of what you put out there for them. And all this is documented. I mean, I would suggest, you know, if you've got today's lesson, that you read today's lesson, it'll explain pretty much everything that Scorpio was asking.
Well, thanks, Cal, and believe it or not, I actually have that in front of me. And because I just published it this morning to our group. And so I will read it. The Anti-Federalists, bitter and alarmed at the haste of ratification, and of course this is the state of Pennsylvania, stepped up a campaign to get the legislature to repudiate the actions of the convention. As Samuel Bryan, Benjamin Workman, and William Finley waged the attack in the press where it could be printed, or with printed essays in the papers which would print them, the Anti-Federalists of Franklin County urged another course of action upon the legislature. And during the month of March in 1788, over 5,000 people signed petitions to the legislature of Pennsylvania to repudiate the Constitution. John Smiley was accused by the Federalists of inciting people to an armed rebellion against the Constitution in western Fayette County and in Pittsburgh. At the end of December of 1787 in radical Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, the Federalists in the town of Carlisle tried to hold a public celebration and bonfire in honor of ratification.
Mike, are you there?
Yeah, did Mike just dropped off.
I think Mike just dropped off. Cal, why don't you take up the reins here for a minute, and I'll try to get Mike back on the call.
Okay. Well, do you want me to – I've got it in front of me. You want me to continue reading it?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. At the end of December 1787 in radical Cumberland County, the Federalists in the town of Carlisle tried to hold a public celebration and bonfire in honor of the ratification. But a radical group of anti-Federalists intervened to disrupt the proceedings. The mob threw a copy of the hated Constitution into fire and shouted damnation to the 46 members and long live the virtuous 23. Now, who that means, I don't know. I haven't looked it up. We can ask Mike who the damnation of the 46 and the virtuous 23 are. The next day, as the Federalists celebrated, the radicals paraded and burned effigies of James Wilson and Chief Justice McKeon at the behest of the vindictive McCain. Seven of the leading rioters were arrested. Finally, in late February 1788, the government agreed to release the prisoners and close the proceedings. Nearly 1,500 men paraded to the jail in celebration and hailed the liberation of the radical anti-federalist communists, or comrades. Well, communist comrades, same thing. The fiery anti-federalists agitation resulted in the last effort of radicals in Pennsylvania, the Harrisburg Convention of September 1788. While George Bryan had developed the idea of such a convention by February, the movement for a convention began in Cumberland County, for a meeting called a county convention to insist on amendments to the Constitution. The radical convention met at Harrisburg on September 3rd with 33 representatives from all but five counties in the state, and led by Samuel Bryan, Whitehill, and Smiley. But at this point in time, enough states had ratified the Constitution to take effect, and all thought of overturning ratification had disappeared. The radicals confined themselves to petitioning for amendments that would restrict the powers of the central government. In doing so, they overrode a young farmer of Fayette County, a brilliant associate of Smiley, Albert Gallatin, future Secretary of the Treasury under President Thomas Jefferson, who urged Pennsylvania to push for amendments at a second constitutional convention. It was young Gallatin's first appearance on the political stage. The radicals, however, failed even to induce the Pennsylvania legislature to seriously propose amendments to the Constitution. And then there is a list of sources that where all of this information comes from. So that if anybody wants to look it up for themselves, it's there. So have we gotten Mike back yet?
No. It looks like the storm knocked his internet down temporarily. So we'll be standing by to see if we can get him back on. But it's looking like he has no internet at this time. So
asked earlier. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You continue.
Well, you had asked, you're sitting here listening to this going, how did this thing ever get ratified? I do the same thing all the time. How can, with all these, glaring faults in this Constitution, how the heck did people who fought for liberty all of a sudden surrender it and go with this? Well, they were kind of forced into it, and a lot of them had no say in it. That's something people need to understand, that the majority of the people had absolutely no say in whether or not this Constitution came into effect.
That's absolutely a great point. I believe we have Mike back. Mike, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm back now. It seems like the storm knocked it out for a few minutes. I apologize for that, folks. Thanks for carrying on, Dave and Cal.
Are you welcome?
Yeah, and Mike, we just finished reading your statement on Telegram, and I was just curious about the arrests that were made.
Yes, the several of the anti-federalists were arrested by at the order of Judge McKean, who was a rabid federalist in Pennsylvania, and so he ordered the arrest of the opposition, and they were held in jail for quite some time. But then when they were released, I believe it was some 1,500 people marched to the jail to witness their release.
So what were the charges?
Opposing the Constitution.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's in essence what it was.
What does that tell you about the power structure of the Constitution?
That's amazing. That is
what
really
does that
shocking.
Tell you? What does that tell you where the mindset of the Federalist was? If you oppose it, you're going to be jailed. How is that liberty? How is that freedom of speech? How is that freedom of expression? How?
That's absolutely shocking.
At some point in time, guys, I can go into the dealings of Judge McKean and how he said that any criticism of the Constitution was, in fact, sedition. And that is why he jailed those people, had those people arrested, to arrest the opposition, to make sure that they weren't out there on the road or out in the streets or where have you, to be telling other people that the whole Constitutional Convention was a fraud.
Right. Now, is there a difference between insurrection and sedition?
That depends on whose person who is making that decision. McKean, on many times during his career sitting on the bench as the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, on several occasions, he called and was basically the essence of the Alien and Sedition Act of 1798, probably was the inspiration for it. During the ratification debates, McKean on several occasions said it should be against the law to speak out against the Federalist. To speak out against the Constitution was in itself a crime. And, guys, that goes way back. And then, Cal, were you able or could you look back at the very beginning of this, if you can find the lesson, when they actually, when several people who were delegates to the ratification convention figured out that it was going to be railroaded through, so they left the convention. I mean, they actually left, physically left, so that there wouldn't be a quorum for a vote. And the radical George Clymer, the radical Federalist, sent armed people, the sergeant of arms, and other people to go and forcibly beat these delegates and carry them to the convention so there could be a vote. Cal, can you find that, please, sir?
I can look for it, but, yeah, the basic story of that, well, that was in the state legislature, because the legislature had to call the convention of people, and that was, and these people figured out, well, they can't call the convention if there's not a quorum, so they refused to attend the emergency session, and they got, you know, beaten and dragged to that session in order to make a quorum, just to fulfill the numbers, and, yeah, it's... that just shows you what went into creating this Constitution. You know, it's all part of the fraud and criminal conspiracy. And then when things didn't work right, well, if the pen doesn't work, the sword will.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Mike, you know, someone in the chat is asking for your Telegram channel. Can you post it in my Skype, and I'll put it in the chat?
Yes, sir. It's just if you're on Telegram, go to Rebel Madman. That would be a simple way to access that.
Is that Rebel Madman or The Rebel Madman?
No, it's just Rebel Madman. Two words.
Two words, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or Constitutional Fraud.
Right, that channel as well. Or if they want to, I don't want to confuse people, but there's also one there called Teach Me True History on Telegram.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's yeah. Like I said, I can't emphasize enough that anybody avails themselves of this, because this is history, the one that you couldn't even find in a college course if you paid for it. And Mike's putting this out there, pretty much out of just his love for history and love for liberty. And so He just not only walks the, you know, talks the talk, he walks the walk, and he puts it out there for people to take advantage of. So yeah, take advantage of Mike and read true history.
Well, thanks for that, Cal. That's one of the things that you know, my grandfather told me when I was young: knowledge not shared is knowledge lost. And I would really like to, for people, as many people as possible, to access this documented history of this country, as opposed to the lies they're being taught in the Marxist educational system. So, thanks very much, Cal, for your addition.
Well, it's not just the lies that they teach; it's the omissions they intentionally leave out. There is so much left out in the history that is taught by the government indoctrination systems and the pundit talking heads on right-wing radio. So, and if you bring it up to them, they just try to shut you down. Or they tell you it's hate speech. Or they tell you you should move to another country for telling the truth, for sharing actual source document history with them. That's the reward, is you get punished.
Well, boy, that's the truth. And let me, if I may, I found that lesson, and I will read this lesson for the people here. We have enough time, I think. Delaware and New Jersey were absurdly easy in ratification, but the same could not be true of the premier Delaware Valley state, Pennsylvania. Therefore, it will take several lessons to cover the ratification efforts in that state. After all, the radical anti-federalists, particularly from the center and western rural interior of the state, promised to be a formidable foe. The Federalists, however, were in luck. The Federalist-dominated Republican Party of Pennsylvania, that was not the same Republican Party of today, but it might as well be, was in the final upward phase of its in-and-out battle with the Radicals. The Radicals were the anti-Federalist folks. The Federalists had finally won out in the commercial and wealthy southeastern part of the state in the fall 1786 elections and had succeeded in rechartering Robert Morris's Bank of North America. With a majority of 40-28 in the 1786 to 1787 assembly, the Federalists acted with ruthless and indecent haste. The assembly had decided to organize on September 29th, but then the ultra-Federalist George Clymer proposed on September 28th that a ratifying convention be called on the same day that Congress had decided to transmit the Constitution to the states. And hence, therefore, the people in the delegates in Pennsylvania would be called to vote on it before they could have read it. Furthermore, the elections for the convention were called for the absurdly early date of November the 2nd, weeks before the non-controversial elections in Delaware. The convention was to open on November 21st. Here was clearly an illegal call for a convention, a call made before the Constitution had even been received. Nancy Pelosi rationale: let's pass this thing so we can find out what's in it. The Radicals fought valiantly to refer the matter to the forthcoming assembly and attack the hastily and virtually illegal move, but they lost by a vote of 43-19. Ain't democracy grand. Finally, the desperate Radicals walked out of the House as this blocked the quorum needed to set the date and conditions for the convention elections. At this point, a monstrous, politically corrupt act occurred that added force to the common Federalist tactic of fraud in the ratification context. A Federalist Philadelphia mob, all urban centers were heavily Federalist, seized two of the radical Federalist defectors, James McCalmont of Cumberland and Jacob Miley of Dauphin, from the mountainous interior, and dragged them, beaten and bloody, into the assembly to make the compulsory quorum. The convention election was called, and the radical minority published an address that formed the basis for the Pennsylvania anti-Federalist position in the battle that followed, and they flooded the press with this public, with this address before public assemblies. The leading anti-Federalist articles in the press were written by Samuel Bryan as Sentinel and John Nicholson, Comptroller General of the state. On the other side, the Federalists used their dominance of the press to the full, and their authoritative essays were written by two young Philadelphians, the lexicographer, teacher, and editor Noah Webster, and the opportunist Tench Cox, soon to be the powerful author of Alexander Hamilton's Financial Plans. Federalist control of the newspapers throughout the state, in fact, was such that only the Eastern readers were informed of the anti-Federalist writings, and the Easterners were almost always anti-Federalists anyway. In Philadelphia, the overwhelming, more numerous Federalist army was led by the eminent James Wilson and Dr. Benjamin Rush. The ugly Philadelphia mob threat loomed once again on election night when it surrounded the house of a leading radical, Alexander Boyd. Seven noted anti-Federalists lived in this house. The mob surrounded the house, pelted it with stones, and threatened to hang all of the anti-Federalists inside. The high-minded Federalists did nothing to prevent the incident or to apprehend the offenders, nor did Philadelphia newspapers even mention the incident at all. Comments, guys?
First off, where was that ever? Well, my first comment is, why wasn't that taught in history? Why is that left out? I mean, this is, why? Well, why wasn't the truth taught in the history classes, the government history classes, unless the government doesn't want you to know the full truth?
Gosh,
if the government doesn't want you to know the full truth, why doesn't the government want you to know the full truth? I come up with more whys. I don't understand how you can't go into history. I come away with more questions than answers, personally.
Well, what if we just call the truth hate speech?
Well, then you would be silencing opposition. That's the point of it.
Well, and it goes back to the concept that certain information is very dangerous. And yes, Mike, let's label it hate speech. Exactly.
Oh, wow. So, Dave, your thoughts, sir, on what you've been subjected to in this hate-filled program today?
Well, you know, I think we're seeing a consistent pattern of molding history to fit the objectives of those in power. This is a recurring theme. You can go all the way from what we're talking about here, all the way up to World War I, World War II, and to what is happening now. It's really quite shocking. And as they say, the song remains the same.
So what you're telling me, Dave and Cal, is that if I can get a mass of people, the mass I refer to as Bubus Americanus, that if I can get a mass number of people to make decisions based on inaccurate or incomplete information, I should have to live by their decision?
Exactly. Yeah, that's how it works. And then the result is you see perfectly healthy young people in their 20s walking around outside wearing a mask.
Still.
Yes, still.
Unfortunately, still. It's absolutely incredible. Cal, your further thoughts, sir, on, I really appreciate you talking about the lesson platform that we have at Teach Me on Facebook Messenger and Teach Me True History on Telegram. Your thoughts.
Enough can't be said about the research that you've done to put that out there. I mean, this is stuff like, today's lessons. I would have never found that on my own. Even though, I do study history, I probably never would have found that on my own. But there it is right there with the, with the documentation below it to say this is where it comes from. I can't thank you enough for putting the truth out there.
Well, Cal, I think it's important something you said there, and let's not skip over it. At the end of this last lesson, what did I list?
You listed the sources where the information came from. So if anybody has wants to look it up for themselves, they can do that.
So,
To present a lesson, yes, you have to take some things. You have to cut and paste things different. And so there's even if you. And that's the thing. If somebody goes and reads it for themselves, it fills in even more gaps. And this is what I like, because you leave those sources and then I can look at them, is it fills in even more nuances and more gaps into it. Because you can't include all of that into one short history lesson. If people don't understand the hours. I mean, the hours I've done is negligible compared to the hours of research and study that you have done. And people, they almost want you to just sum it all up into one paper. And you can't. It's almost a compilation of over 2,000 years of history. the pinnacle of the Enlightenment being the Declaration of Independence. How many people understand the Enlightenment era? Or what is known as the Age of Reason, where people actually stopped and thought for a bit. I thought, this is how things should be. I mean, the king shouldn't be in charge. No, my rights don't come from the king. They come from my God. I mean, that's part of the Enlightenment. That's part of the reason. I mean, if you sit down and think about it, my rights come from my creator, not from the government, not from a king. But for how many thousands of years, that wasn't the case in man's history. It's amazing. And unfortunately, we're regressing back into, our rights come from the government. I mean, people call them constitutional rights instead of unalienable or natural rights.
Right.
I mean, it's part of the narrative. Yeah, or God-given rights. Exactly. And it's all part of the narrative. I operate on a thing where control the narrative, control the people. Change the narrative, you'll change the people. And it's easier to control the people's hearts and minds through the narrative than through the tip of the Roman spear.
Well, Cal, you mentioned it, and I mentioned it. I brought it up. So I want to just the last lesson that I did, the last lesson that I provided on Teach Me on Messenger on Facebook, I will list the sources that I used for one lesson. Sources, Professor Jackson Turner Main, The Anti-Federalist, pages 147 and 250. Brunhaus, The Counter-Revolution in Pennsylvania, pages 208 through 215. Pennsylvania and the Federal Constitution in 1787, 1788. Editors John McMaster and Frederick Stone. Lancaster, The Historical Society of Pennsylvania, 1888, pages 14 through 15, 250, 255 through 256, 161, 480, and pages 557 through 58. R. Carter Pittman, Jasper Yates' Notes on the Pennsylvania Ratification Convention, 1787, which was in the William and Mary Quarterly, April of 1965, on page 308. That is my documentation for one lesson. So, thoughts, Dave?
Well, I'm just struck by the recurring patterns you're talking about, and I think the overarching issue here is that human behavior and human motivation really hasn't changed very much. Only the settings and the costumes and the technology, the behavior and motivations are the same. And that's why history is such a great indicator of what's to come.
Well, how do you mold a people to support your criminal acts, Cal?
You convince them that's not criminal, that it's virtuous.
Or you make the criminal acts legal
somehow,
by law.
Yeah, or you make them, yeah. It would, somehow it's virtuous to bomb other people on the other side of the world for, I don't know, for being on the other side of the world, I guess.
Well,
and that's virtue.
You know, Cal, you mentioned something, and this week I was just absolutely astounded that some wonderful Republican on social media talked about what a great feat it was in 2014 for the United States government to overthrow a democratically elected leader in the Ukraine. And, of course, this wonderful Republican said that the reason he was overthrown was because he had a terribly corrupt administration influenced by Vladimir Putin. So he made the statement that he thought that that was a great thing for the United States government to do. But then I asked him, are you aware that the people who led this overthrow were Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and John McCain? And he was stunned. And I said, would you also be surprised that these might have been the same people who overthrew the election in the United States in 2020? Is now that a good thing? Is it a good thing that they could do it in Ukraine and a bad thing they could do the same thing in America? Of course, I got no response.
Well, but, yeah, people have even forgotten the history of what happened in Ukraine 8 years ago. They don't mention it at all. It's incredible.
Well,
most people don't know. Most people are unaware that the United States overthrew.
Are you saying, Cal, that people in America make decisions, political and emotional decisions, based on half-truths and lies?
Yeah, and ignorance, yes, they do. They live their whole life that way. Their whole worldview is based on half-truths and lies.
What will happen to a country that makes its decisions on that and believes that their decisions made on innuendo, half-truths, lies, and total propaganda, that their decisions are based in fact when people's factual decisions are irrelevant? You think we might be in the mess we're in today?
That's why this is such a mess. I mean, how many times has it been proven that the media has lied to you? Yeah, the next story they come up with, everybody believes right off the bat. I don't understand that. How many times can you be lied to before you discount the information completely? I mean, this is why I don't watch TV. It's just propaganda. They call it programming for a reason.
Well, and you know, Henry Kissinger's observation that, you know, perception matters, not truth, even though that's extremely dangerous thinking, it's exactly how governments are operated. It's the thinking that can, that is essentially is like the it's the quintessential thinking of government power.
Well, Dave, before we get towards the end, I don't want to jam anything up, but before we get towards the end of the program today, why don't you tell the folks what's on tap for Operation Scorpio tomorrow?
Well, Mike, I'm going to have a special guest, Mr. Mike Gatti and Daryl Wayne, and we are going to delve into some very forbidden information. Book series from the Nation of Islam, no less, about the slave trade and sort of the implications of the slave trade and what really happened. So this is very interesting and very forbidden information. So I hope everyone takes the time to stay tuned. And Mike, you're going to present a lot of, you know, well-documented information. It's not opinion. It's documented information.
Well, it is well-documented, Dave, but should we not consider the source that this information came from, Louis Farrakhan? Should we not do your program because it might be based on hate?
Well, it's the documentation that counts more than the source. So
I said that facetiously, my friend.
Yeah, right. of course. But yeah, of course. But, you know, the Nation of Islam, you know, you think what you want about it, but it seems to serve some of those guys quite well. I've met some of those people, and on a lot of levels, they seem to have their act together. So it's a very interesting bit of information here, Mike, and I can't wait to delve into it tomorrow.
Well, history is history, Dave, regardless of who references it, right?
That's a great point. It doesn't matter if you personally like the person that's bringing the information forward. What matters is the information, exactly.
Well, Dave, I think back many times to an old gentleman who's passed away now who I first encountered at the No Such Agency back in 1968, and we were going through some intel that we were receiving at the time about Russia's planned invasion of Czechoslovakia, and this was in the summer of 68, and I remember looking at a piece of intel, and I kind of tossed it aside, and I said, well, I'm not sure we can consider that. And he said, wait. He picked it up and he looked at it and he said, why do you say that it needs to be discounted? And I said, because of the source. And he said, no. He said, let me tell you something about this business. Never discount any piece of information because of the source if you can't prove it's false.
Right, because otherwise your personal opinion or perception becomes more important than the truth.
Opinion over fact, exactly. And that was a lesson he taught me back then. Never discount any piece of intel until you can prove it's wrong. Now, if I could have looked at that intel at the time and said, oh, that's hate speech, throw it in the trash can, where would I be?
And Mike, you know, the concept of hate speech is an extremely slippery slope, because really anything can be deemed hate speech by those in power. Once you go down that road,
exactly.
You can make anything hate speech. It's really either, you know, free speech is sort of an absolute. It's like being pregnant. Either you have it or you don't. Either you are or you're not.
Well, Dave, I remember back in 2016 writing an article called It's Not Your Flag, talking about the Confederate battle flag. And that article was published in several different places. It's still available on the Internet for any of those who would like to go to the Abbeville Institute and look up It's Not Your Flag. And I quoted that from documented evidence in my article. I actually had a lady in Arkansas who read that article and told me that I should apologize to her publicly for that article. So, even when you tell the truth, you should apologize for it. Right, Cal?
Yeah, telling the truth, they try to shame you for it. They hate speech, invite you to leave the country. People don't want to hear the uncomfortable truth. It doesn't fit into their narrative in their head, even though it's the truth. Instead of adjusting their understanding of reality to the truth and the facts, they just discount or disregard the truth.
Utterly convenient.
It's what the parchment workers do. Parchment worshippers are doing constantly to this day. I don't know. People don't want to hear the truth.
Well,
there's not much money in. Are you getting rich doing this, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, I just can't. I spend most of my day just counting my money. It's amazing that how much money can be made peddling lies, and why the truth goes unrewarded.
Well. Nobody said the truth or right for liberty was going to be easy. I'm telling you right now, it's not.
Well, Emma Goldman said Americans truly don't want to be free. They want to be comfortable, and they want to be entertained. And what entertains people more than the lobotomy box?
The powers that be, they know how to manipulate the people. They know how to control the narrative.
Absolutely.
They've been doing it for hundreds of years, if not thousands.
Oh, so shifting gears just a little bit, Dave, how's our friend Giuseppe doing in his move?
All systems go. He's doing great. No hang-ups. I think he's very excited about his new life there. So he'll be on tonight for his show with special guest Robert Phoenix. And talking about the neocons, so that ought to be interesting as well.
Oh, well, are you talking about the neoconservatives or the neo-confederates?
I believe the neoconservatives.
Oh, okay, that bunch. You mean those Democrats that became Republicans during Ronald Reagan's era because it was easier to get elected?
Right. And, of course, their ideological origins as well.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be an interesting program. Dave, if you would, let's take just a second. Tell the listeners how they can support Revolution Radio, please, sir.
Well, absolutely. As everyone knows, you're not going to hear information like this anywhere else without restrictions. And of course, as they say, freedom isn't free and neither is free speech. So everyone, please come aboard revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com. go on the Patreon page, become a Patreon member, give what you can, try to give something every month to keep the gears turning, because, you know, the servers have to be paid for, all the equipment and keeping things updated, you know, and nobody is paid. None of the management's paid. Neither are the hosts, as I can tell you, and so can Mike. So this is all sort of a labor of love, and we really do need the donations to keep the station going. And go on the Zazzle store. AMAT is actually working on a whole new line of coffee cups, so you can kind of go on to your favorite show and order a custom-made coffee cup that shows, you know, your show. The favorite shows that you like. So order a couple of them. There's all kinds of, there's shirts, there's even shoes, hats, all kinds of stuff there on the Zazzle store. So, that's another way to support the station. And lastly, if you scroll down to the bottom of the front page, there is a snail mail, address where you can actually mail in donations the old fashioned way.
Wow. Thanks, Dave. And yes, folks, it is important. If you have a platform out there that actually embraces free speech, and that's free speech from everybody, if you have a platform out there that embraces that, it definitely deserves your support, because they are becoming few and far between. So, Cal, well, I'm still on the air. That was nasty, but I'm still on the air.
That was very, very close.
We can hear that one all the way. I can hear that one all the way over here in Arizona, Mike.
Well, I believe that bolt of lightning hit my back pocket, but I'm not sure.
the hair so, up on the back of your neck after that one.
Yeah, that, and it really upsets my pups. They don't care for this at all. So, Cal, kind of give us a synopsis of what we've tried to cover today.
Well, I guess what we were trying to cover is how everybody is indoctrinated through the government school system and by the lobotomy box. I mean, when you talk with a lot of people, you bring them source documents, and all they do is regurgitate talking points, obviously talking points, that they've heard from the TV or the favorite right-wing radio pundit. It's obvious. I mean, I don't listen to them, but I can pick out when they do that, because they all kind of repeat the same mantra at the same time. they're like Pavlovian dogs. They've been trained by the school system, and the media is their bell, and they just react to it. And it's sad to be living with a bunch of Pavlovian dogs who aren't interested in liberty.
Especially when they're in the majority.
They're definitely in the majority.
That's why democracy has never worked. That is why even John Adams said democracy, there has never been a democracy that didn't commit suicide. Ooh. Are we there yet, guys?
And short-lived petty republics.
Yeah.
History says that this American empire will fall.
And Jefferson said that democracy was mob rule. And Benjamin Franklin said that democracy is two wolves and a chicken deciding what's for dinner.
Yeah, Mike, I sent you this article about China and Saudi Arabia working to de-dollarize the world with some of their new trade agreements. So that's a very ominous ship on the horizon there, guys.
Oh, absolutely. I see the machinations taking effect now that you've got, as soon as Biden pulled the troops out of Afghanistan, and they shouldn't have been there to start with, but as soon as he pulled the troops out of Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia signed a working agreement with Putin. Now, that hasn't been broadcast in many places, but they signed working agreement because they figured America was no longer going to protect their interest in the Middle East.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, Groper Joe keeps shooting America in the foot and expecting the Russians to cry out in pain. So a lot of ominous ships on the horizon, guys. Not looking good in a lot of ways for what's coming.
No, it is very sad. And, of course, tomorrow I will have really be honored to be on Dave's Operation Scorpio along with DW. And on Sunday evening, DW and I will have a program called Addicted to Your Own Destruction, and we will be discussing whatever pops up, you know. And we had a great time last week and really enjoyed it. Had some technical difficulties near the end, not sure where they came from, but I have a good idea. But anyway, that is, and also, let's look again, pardon the redundancy, but look at my Telegram channels, Rebel Madman, Constitutional Frog, and Teach Me True History. And on Tuesday evenings, we have actually a live lesson on Teach Me True History. And for those of you who would like to come aboard, we'd love to have you. And again, not to be redundant, but replay of today's show will be posted on Rebel Madman shortly after this program is over. So if you didn't get to hear it all, especially the boom of lightning hitting right down the road here, almost visible from my place, I know you heard the sound. Several of you have commented on that. So, yes, we're in the middle of a violent thunderstorm, but I love them. Gosh, guys, anything else we want to say in the last minute we got left here? Cal, go ahead.
Well, I want to read a quote from Isaac Morehouse. And, you know, people want to know what to do and how things should be. But here's what Isaac Morehouse said. He said, "When the world becomes free, it will not be by the creation of new laws or the removal of old or new political leaders or any election result. It will not be because of a change of in government, but because of a change in attitude toward government. It will not be because of legislation, but because of a disregard for legislation. Genuine change will not come when the state is ignored nor reformed. Genuine change will come when the state is ignored, not reformed. It will come not when politicians are better, but when they are irrelevant. When state-made law is no longer deemed necessary or important, it will not be respected. When it is not respected, it will not be enforced because it will not be enforceable." That's
beautiful.
The goal where people want to go to. It's like, how do you get to that? Well, you don't get to it by making more government.
There's the music. Thanks, Cal. That was a brilliant comment. And thanks, Dave. Thanks, Cal. Folks, come back with us next week on Dare to Think Out Loud.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Zero X E 0513. We talk about decentralization.